And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky, wishing you a very happy Thanksgiving. I know we got another episode coming your way, but it is Thanksgiving week, Buck. Have you you got all your food? You ready to go?
Yeah, man, I'm always ready to go for Thanksgiving. I love it. I love it. I love it. Hey, DJ, what's your favorite dish on Thanksgiving? Like, that's always a big debate.
Oh, you know what? I only have this like once a year, but I'm a green bean casserole.
Oh,
so a little off the beaten path there.
Look at you.
You know, the kind of like the crispy onion strings, you know, that kind of go along with
it. How about that?
I'm a big fan.
Look, green bean casserole. This is funny because
what do you got?
My mom would hate me for this story, but I'm gonna tell it anyway because she's not gonna listen. So for years at Thanksgiving, we would always have like cranberry sauce on the side, right? And I would always like, from the time I was a kid, I think I didn't discover this until I was a teenager, I'd be like, man, I cranberry sauce, I absolutely love it. Like, and mom, how do you put the ridges on the cranberry sauce? Little did I know that it was always canned cranberry sauce, the jelly. But it was always my favorite part. So cranberry sauce to me signifies Thanksgiving. And it always reminded me of the conversation that I had with my mom about that. And she was like,
How do you do? How do you pull that off, bro?
straight out the can.
That is great. Stuffing, by the way, stuffing thumbs up or thumbs down on stuffing?
Ooh, I'm a thumbs up guy on stuffing. And if it has a little gravy and some of the gravy has some giblets and some of that stuff in it, I'm all about it.
You'll go get that as well. All right, we've got a fun episode today. We're going to really dive into what's right with the Ravens, what's wrong with the Rams, because I think we've got a pretty good showing on both those fronts on the Monday Night Football game. We'll have a chance to talk about a couple college players we're taking a peek at as well. But, Buck, I want to start here with this game last night. Just first of all, what's the bigger storyline? Is it good Ravens or bad Rams?
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's one of those things where you have to look at both sides of it. I think we probably should start. Let's start with the Ravens because I know you're very familiar with the organization. And I think, DJ, I tweeted this last night, and I really believe it. We've talked about it in the evaluation. I think in back-to-back years, I think scouts are going to have to kind of change the way they look at the quarterback position. I think with Pat Mahomes winning the MVP last year and then with maybe Lamar Jackson winning it this year, I think a lot of what we had always done when it came to looking at quarterbacks is tell me what he does, tell me how he fits into the pro-style system, and then we'll make our grade off of those premises. I think now evaluators have to take a different view at the quarterback position. It's not just, okay, here are his skills. Here's what he does really well. Here's where he struggles. It's also, okay, this is the player. What can we do to help him become a dominant player in the National Football League? What creative thoughts can we have schematically, team building, to look at this prospect and kind of see what could he be at the next level? And I don't think the quarterback position has always been viewed like that. It typically had been, this is a player, this is how he fits. Ah, he doesn't fit, let's move on to the next one. But I think with Pat Mahomes and now with Lamar Jackson, they are going to test evaluators' imagination and creativity when they have those conversations with decision makers in the room.
Yeah, look, Buck, to me, I think of like you go to the beach as a kid and, you know, your parents kind of tell you, you got to stay between this lifeguard tower and then this buoy or whatever. You know, it's just because you have to keep you in your sights because they know what's there. They can monitor you. They can see what's going on and they're comfortable and it's safe. And there's that old phrase, right? Uncharted waters. To me, that's where we are right now in scouting because forever it's been, okay, this is what we know works, okay? So let's make sure we're keeping everything inside this box here. Mm-hmm. And now it's, you know what? Lamar Jackson's outside the comfort zone because it's not something we've seen have long-term success. We haven't seen – how many times have you heard this from scouting buddies? And I'm sure we've said it as well. You cannot improve your accuracy. Your accuracy is what it is. You cannot improve that. Well, let's go back and look at Lamar Jackson in college. 54.7% his first year, 56.2% his second year, 59.1% his third year. So he goes to the NFL his first year, 58.2, so kind of on par with where he's been. Right now he's at 66.9. He's a 67% passer. So, you know, we've kind of had these rules in place, right? You can't, you know, maybe it's a slender build. Maybe it's somebody that's accuracy can't improve. Oh, you can't rely on somebody to run like he runs. Like, he's breaking all of these rules, Buck. He's breaking all of them. And I think that's good for us as evaluators to see, man, okay, you don't have, it's not the way it's always been. You've got to be able to think bigger. You've got to be able to think broader. You've got to see outside the box. And I tip my cap to the Baltimore Ravens because they were able to see that and envision that and create that. And Lamar Jackson's been absolutely phenomenal.
He has been absolutely phenomenal. And I think there are a couple of things that I want to touch on when it comes to Jackson in particular. All those things that you talked about, we never have seen anyone who really could significantly improve their accuracy. And you still wonder with Lamar Jackson, the notes that I had when he was coming out of college, Lamar Jackson is great inside the numbers. I consistently wrote down in-breaking routes, seam throws, things that are kind of down that traditional line
coming
of sight.
To him, yeah.
Yeah, it, really good. Stationary throws where guys are kind of posted up, spotted to him where he can see it. Great. Things where guys are breaking away from him, he struggled. I still don't believe he is great with those throws, but I think the great thing about what the Baltimore Ravens have done, they don't ask him to make those throws. It is rare that you see him make them from the pocket where they're asking him to direct it towards the sideline. The throws that he makes that are down near the boundary, those are when he's rolling out. If you really go back and look at him, they are doing things that really fit how he plays. And I think the credit has to go to their coaching staff for looking at the player, taking what the player does really well, and finding a way to put him in that situation over and over and over again. Now, it requires a level of creativity because each and every week you have to kind of add to what you're doing to keep the defenses off your scent. But they are really routinely asking him to make throws that he's always made, even back to Louisville. The second thing that I think we have to do, I think this for me is the case study in trust the player over the projection. I think with Lamar Jackson, maybe what we didn't know, maybe from our seats, is we didn't really get a chance to really get to know the kid. And I think by all accounts, if you ask anybody in Baltimore, hard worker, a guy who has really put in a lot of time, loves football. And I think if anyone had an opportunity to see the post-game interview, he talks in terms of we, not me. And I think the most impressive part of that is he is really about the team. When they asked him questions about the MVP and stuff, he consistently replied, man, I don't care about that. I'm trying to win the Super Bowl. If we win the Super Bowl, if we. Not a lot of me stuff. And I think when we go through the process, the guys that are consistently about the team, about the broader perspective, those are the guys that you want as your QB1.
No, that's a great point. And that's one of those questions, you know, we ask these guys as they come through that we've picked up over the last year or so. What does a successful rookie season look like for you? And you learn a lot from that answer because some guys will hit you with the individual accolades. Other guys will talk about going to the playoffs and trying to win a Super Bowl. That does tell you a little bit of something about him as a kid. Look, Buck, you mentioned not asking him to do, you know, make throws that he wasn't comfortable with. And I think back to look at Colin Kaepernick, who was a real whisker away from winning a Super Bowl, ironically, against the Baltimore Ravens. But when he was coming out, I remember having this discussion. We had it on the show talking about Colin Kaepernick at one point in time. Everything with him was hard and flat. Like he just struggled to layer the football, be able to throw those up and under throws, just it required some touch. That wasn't something he excelled at, but he could really drive the football. And then with the 49ers, what did they do? They threw a bunch of like bang eights. They threw a bunch of slants, a bunch of seam routes. Everything was hard and fast. So those are the throws he was comfortable with. Ironically, it's the same guy, right? Greg Roman kind of crafting that offense with the 49ers around Colin Kaepernick, only asking him to make the throws he's comfortable making, different types of throws he struggled with. Take it out. You don't need to do it. And you've seen the same thing happen with Lamar Jackson. And I am even seeing improvement with him thrown outside the numbers. He had a couple outs in that game last night that he just simply didn't make those throws in college. He missed a bunch of them, missed them last year with the Baltimore Ravens. So you can tell he's put in the work. And as the confidence grows, doing what you're really good at, you all of a sudden you find out you start getting better in some of these areas where you weren't so good. So to me, I think it's a huge testament there to the Baltimore Ravens. And I want to say this is a huge testament. We can talk about the pieces around Lamar Jackson, the offense, the culture, the team. This kid obviously has worked extremely hard in the offseason to improve. I heard they were talking in the broadcast, and he had mentioned, like, man, I couldn't throw a spiral. Like, I struggled to throw spirals. Well, he's obviously put in the time, and he's throwing the ball so well right now. And I think it's you know, we try and figure out everything around Lamar Jackson and why it is. And look, the biggest part of it is he's put in the work and he's playing at a high level. He deserves the credit.
He absolutely deserves the credit. And DJ, I think, and we've seen this because we've talked about personally going to games and watching the quarterback. And little of it, like part of the reason we do that has to do with, hey, we want to see a guy throw it live. But really, you and I have talked about, we really want to see their interactions with the teammates. And does the team gravitate towards the player? Does he gravitate towards the team? What happens while the defense is on the field? Do you see kind of that muddle huddle where everyone is together because they really hang on the words of the quarterback and vice versa? And I think when I look at the Ravens, I think there's a genuine affection and respect that his teammates have for him. And we talk about franchise quarterbacks and we talk about the leader of the team and all of those things. I think the biggest way that you see it is I was watching the game last night, and at the end of the game, I mean, they are absolutely throttling the Rams, and they're going in and they pan to the sideline, and DJ, everybody's toes were at the sideline looking at what was about to happen on offense. And you and I have both worked for teams. We've seen teams where when the offense is on the field, the defense is on the other end. They are not even paying attention to what's going on. But because Lamar Jackson captures their imagination, he has kind of earned their respect, everyone pays attention. I mean, even Wink Martindale was looking down to see what was about to happen. I think that's really a credit to the kid more so than anything else. There's something about him and the way that he has gone about his business and worked at his craft that has earned him the respect of his teammates. And I think that is invaluable when we talk about the quarterback and how he fits into the team.
I want to flip it over to the other side before we get to the Rams here, flip it over to the Ravens defense, because this is something I feel like this is said a lot, but I don't know that, you know, that we've had a chance to weigh on in this, because I firmly believe this. When you have an offensive style that your defense sees all throughout the offseason and all through training camp, that makes a difference for what type of defense that you possess. And to me, when you look at this Baltimore Ravens defense, now they've got a collection of good players. They've got really good players in the secondary. I don't know that they have elite players like they might have had in years past. But Buck, they just bang heads with that physical run game and that offensive line all offseason, all training camp. It's a hardened, tough, physical group. And I think Booker made kind of a goofy analogy when he was talking about,
Baltimore and the Wire
versus the Wire.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, having worked for East Coast teams, that is 100% the way that they feel, that we are just a tougher, grittier, nastier bunch. And when we come out and find this passing finesse team and punch them in the mouth, you know, we'll see what happens. And that, to me, is that defense benefits from the style of offense that they play, is what I'm trying to get to.
No, I absolutely agree with you. Two points I want to make on that. It is absolutely true that your defensive style matches your offense. Teams that are kind of hard and scrabble, run-first teams, typically have kind of a gritty, tough, physical defense. I also believe that you craft the identity of your team that way, that I think Baltimore clearly understands that in playing complementary football, your defense has to match your offense. And as a coach on both sides, you have to play to that, meaning offensively, I call the game to complement my defense. Defensively, I also call the game to complement my offense. The example is typically when you are a run team, on defense, that means you want to be more aggressive. You want to come after people, create negative situations, put them in long yardage situations so they have to pass. So then defensively, we can get after it, force turnovers, and the like. Then on offense, we want to run the ball, control the clock. So now the defense is on the field, fewer minutes, fewer possessions. That allows them to play that aggressive style. The other point that you make, you talked about being on the East Coast. And this is something that I've always believed in sports teams. Your team has to reflect the ideals of the city. And so years ago, if you can close your eyes and think about the Bad Boy Pistons, where everyone who has been around Detroit understands the blue-collar mentality, the hard hat and lunch pail mentality that the citizens of Detroit had because of the auto industry. Well, the Bad Boys play like that. When Booger was making kind of making the analogy about Baltimore, when you close your eyes and you think about the city of Baltimore, when I then look at the Baltimore Ravens, it kind of matches. It's the same thing that I've always believed about Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is a rough and tumble industrial city, hard-nosed, rugged, where the Pittsburgh Steelers play like that. Cold. And so for me, I do believe there is something to that. And with the Rams, and we'll get to that, there was a Hollywood nature to the Rams last year. It was a lot of sizzle and flash and creative, boy wonder coach. Everything looked kind of Hollywood right out of a movie. And now I'm wondering, are they tough enough? Are they rugged enough to deal with some of these things? Because what we're seeing from the Rams are when you hit the Rams in the mouth, they don't respond. And I wonder, for long-term success, can they recapture some of the toughness that they need to be a team that legitimately competes for the championship.
Yeah, and that gets us to the Rams here because I want to talk about them. And we'll get let's start with Jared Goff here. I want to touch on this, Buck, because we just came off talking about Lamar Jackson, and we give Lamar Jackson all the credit in the world, but environment does matter. It is a part of the equation. And I think when you look at the Rams, I want to show you the numbers here. I printed these out from last year to this year. So I'm going to go through a couple different quarterbacks, and we'll get back to Jared Goff. Jared Goff, last year, 4,688 yards, 32 touchdowns, 12 picks with a 101 rating. This year right now, 61% passer, 11 touchdowns, 12 picks, an 80.3 rating. Okay, so that's Jared Goff. Now, let me give you a couple other quarterbacks. Phillip Rivers last year, 32 touchdowns, 12 picks. This year, Phillip Rivers, 15 touchdowns, 14 picks. Derek Carr last year, 19 touchdowns, 10 picks. This year, Derek Carr is already at 15-6. So a little bit different there. He's a 70% passer. His completion percentage has gone up a couple points. What I'm getting to is Chargers offensive line issues, Rams offensive line issues, the Raiders offensive line upgrade. And I think even Carson Wentz would be another one I would probably throw in there with some of the injuries they've had in the offensive line. Most quarterbacks, Buck, are a little bit dependent on the environment that they're in. Now, there's the rare exceptions, absolutely. But for the most part, they fall into that category where they need the pieces to be in place around them. And I think we've seen really startling changes from one year to the next with some quarterbacks. And Jared Goff, I think, right now is probably the poster boy for that.
I absolutely agree. And I think this is the thing where, and I kind of blame the media side for it, because a lot of what we've always done is we've kind of painted these quarterbacks as if everything hangs on their shoulder. They do everything. And I think what we're beginning to see is what you really said, environment matters. And that even though the quarterback is the highest paid, they get all the notoriety and the attention. Every successful quarterback, with the exception of maybe one or two, they need everything around them to be right, to be able to function at a high level. Meaning the offensive line, because the protection and the running game really matter when it comes to the quarterback. The protection on conventional dropback passes, they need to have the comfort of being able to get to the top of the drop without defenders in their face. The running game matters because it enables them to control the game, to throw off play action. And even though I know the analytics crowd right now is screaming when they hear the podcast, that play action doesn't matter whether the run game is successful or not, but the threat of a strong running game really creates open voids at the intermediate and deep levels of the defense in the passing game, and it really enables a quarterback to have these easy shots. It's not a coincidence that Jimmy Garoppolo, Kirk Cousins are playing better this year because the running game is effective for both teams. There is something to the play-action passing game that works. Baker Mayfield, This last game, Baker Mayfield had one of the more successful games that we've seen in NFL history off play action. You know why the Cleveland Browns have been better? 37% of their offensive snaps last week, they were in 12 personnel. 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, two wide receivers. What you're seeing with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and we've said this, they're running the offense through the running backs and then using Baker Mayfield as the complement. It is a common theme. When you're solid up front, you can run the ball. It helps the quarterback. And more teams are finding out that the hard way, maybe we need to invest a little more in the offensive line to make sure that our quarterbacks have everything that they need to be successful.
I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. If you have a great running game, does not mean you're going to get great quarterback play. Mm-hmm. But 9 times out of 10, if you have great quarterback play, you've had great running back play. Does that make any sense? I mean, yes. If you just look at it, let's look at the top. Look at quarterback rating right now. Kirk Cousins is number one. They can run the football with Dalvin Cook. Russell Wilson's number two. They can run the rock. Lamar Jackson, obviously, he's a component of the run game, but they're leading the league in rushing. Ryan Tannehill is at 111.4. Look at what they do with Derrick Henry. Mm-hmm. Mahomes, that run game's been a little bit inconsistent. He's maybe an outlier there. Drew Brees, absolutely, they can run the football. I mean, the list goes on and on, Buck. These guys that are playing really well, they have the benefit of a run game. And I think that matters. I know, like you said, the analytics crowd doesn't like to hear that. But I think that does matter. I think it means you're getting good offensive line play. You're getting yourself in positive positions. Because you can't tell me that Jared Goff is that much worse of a player at his age, the age he's at right now, to see the drop-off in his performance from last year to this year. It's not just Jared Goff. It has to be the environment and the surrounding around him. And that, to me, is the offensive line play and the run game. There's nowhere else to point.
I mean, that's everything. And I think with the L.A. Rams, there are a couple of things that trouble me about the L.A. Rams. So much of the credit we gave to Sean McVay for elevating Jared Goff. Well, right now, this is when coaching really matters. And coaches have to always stay one step ahead of the posse, meaning when you're an offensive coach in the National Football League, the things that we learn quickly, defensive coaches adjust, and they adjust in a hurry. And so you always have to have a counterpunch that enables you to continue to kind of stay ahead of them. What I'm disappointed in when I look at the Rams, I mean, this has been a consistent theme since the Bears game a season ago. We saw the Bears slow them down. We then saw the Patriots throttle them in the Super Bowl. And we knew that every defensive coordinator in the league was going to look at that Super Bowl tape and see what the Patriots did to slow them down, and the Rams would need to have an answer to combat that. To this point, they have not had a consistent answer to the way teams are playing, whether it's that 6-1 front where they're loading up and containing the edges and making them run inside. Teams have found out that the Rams are really weak up the middle. Center guard play has not been their strength. And so because they can't move people off the ball and they can't get to the edges, their running game is null and void. Without the threat of a solid running game, they're now having to throw when everyone in the stadium knows they have to throw. The threat of the play action isn't credible enough for people to kind of slow down. And so Jared Goff is now being forced to make more tight window throws, more throws against loaded coverage, and he's having a tough time, like any quarterback would have. And so Sean McVay has to figure out, what are the next steps? What can I do to diversify this offense? What are the things that we can do to put the defense back on their heels? That is a challenge that he has to – that's a question that he has to answer. And right now he has come up with zeros, and I'm beginning to wonder – what else does he have in the bag, because he hasn't been able to really overcome this challenge?
This is what would concern me as well with the Rams, Buck, when you look at this team. The money tied up in a handful of players, right? And they're going to have to pay Jalen Ramsey whatever he wants after parting with the pick. So he's going to eat up a huge chunk of that. Then you look at the offensive line. That's not a good offensive line. Andrew Whitworth, we're probably coming to the end of that one right there. So you're going to need to replace him. So you've got, and I think receiver-wise, you've got really good players, but I wouldn't say that you have a true alpha dog number one wide receiver.
Bunch of B's and B pluses.
Todd Gurley with his health situation going forward, that scares me. No first-round pick next year. A lot of your money is tied up. you look inside the division, Buck, look at San Francisco where they are with the youth on their team on defense as well as, you know, kind of they're continuing to grow offensively. They're an elite team right now. The Seattle Seahawks completely rebuilt their team on the fly. They're one of the best teams in football. And the Arizona Cardinals have probably the most exciting young quarterback. You know, talking about this first, second-year guys, I don't know if you would take anybody over Kyler Murray the way he's playing. They're only going to get better. So, man, that when you look at the landscape of their roster, their division, and going forward, the money that's tied up, the not having a first-round pick, I mean, it's not a great look, man, when you really step back and look at it here.
No, it's not a great look. And I think also, DJ, we'll go kind of full circle. We talked about Baltimore and the way that Baltimore plays, a beat-em-up style of football that is kind of like rock'em sock'em robots, where two teams in their division, San Francisco and Seattle, they play the same way. So – are the Rams equipped to deal with these teams that kind of want to play in a phone booth? And so we always talked about it, and this is something that I think both of us learned in our previous stop. I learned this as a player in Buffalo when Marv Levy said, the easiest way to get to the playoffs is to own your division. And when you build your team, you got to build it with your division in mind. Right now, when I look at the Rams, I don't know if they're built to win their division, because the San Francisco 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks run heavy, dynamic quarterbacks that are athletic, physical defenses. And I will say Seattle's defense is a couple notches below San Francisco, but they run hard. They play with effort. They are physical. They try and dictate the terms. When I look at the LA Rams, I don't know if they're still equipped to deal with those teams. And so without first round picks, without the money to go and kind of flip the roster, it is on Sean McVay and his offensive staff and his coaching staff to be creative with what they have. And are they creative enough to come up with answers to deal with these beat-em-up teams that are in their division?
Oh, it's going to be interesting to see. And you remember the Rams and Chargers going into that new stadium next year. Neither team really where they want to be at this point in time, trying to get some of that momentum going into the new building. I'll be anxious to see how the roster changes for both those teams as we go into next season. Buck, I want to talk about some of these college players you might be watching. But before we get to the college players, I kind of talked to you about this before we started the episode and wanted to get your thoughts on the air on this one. Because I was thinking about, as the college season winds down and we're starting to see some college coaching changes take place, we know the NFL, we've already seen one change there with the Washington Redskins. We'll see more. There's going to be jobs that open up, and inevitably we're going to hear stories and rumors about college coaches jumping up a level. A couple names that I would say keep an eye on. Matt Rhule, we've talked about. We've had him on the show. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview. Mm-hmm. Matt Rhule would be a candidate. Matt Campbell, who has a phenomenal reputation at Iowa State's young, bright coach, is another one. But this third one, I don't know that we've really heard talked about much in terms of making the leap up to the next level. And I think I've got an interesting location for where he could end up. And that's Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen is at Florida. Dan Mullen, everybody knows, was under Urban Meyer as his offensive coordinator. Then he was at Mississippi State as a head coach there. Got that program up to number, I think they were number one or number mm-hmm. two in the country at one point in time there at Mississippi State. Now he's at Florida trying to get that thing rolling. But this is somebody that has, you know, creative offensive mind, somebody who is up on kind of some of the quarterback run game that we're seeing now more and more in the NFL. So you can add some of that. He's still youthful, still energetic, still passionate. And having Coach Dak Prescott at Mississippi State, Buck, man, he checks a lot of boxes. If the Dallas Cowboys did decide to move on from Jason Garrett after the year was up, I would not sleep on Dan Mullen as a potential candidate there.
So how about this, DJ, because when you mentioned it prior to the show, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense in this regard. The connection that he already has with Dak Prescott is significant, because I am sure Dak Prescott and Dan Mullen have continued to maintain a relationship. So Dan Mullen has not only seen Dak Prescott's growth from his time as a high schooler to being a college player who was a legitimate candidate to win the Heisman Trophy, to now watching him from afar grow and develop as an NFL quarterback. You would like to think that because they have a relationship, he would be able to continue to add pieces to the offensive puzzle that would enable Dak Prescott to continue to take his game up a level. Because he also knows Dak Prescott, he knows the leadership ability, he knows where he's at, he can build an offense that is really suited to where he is and where he can go. His creativity now comes at the great time, because more than ever, NFL offenses are beginning to look like the college offenses that we see on Saturdays. Also, the success that Cliff Kingsbury has had quickly transitioning from a college football coach to an NFL coach and having offensive success now leads me to believe that Dan Mullen would be able to do that. I would suggest that if Dan Mullen makes the leap to the pros, he then needs to find an old school NFL defensive coordinator that could also kind of serve as the assistant head coach to allow him to really focus on the offense and building that up. I think what is interesting when I look at Dan Mullen's offenses at Mississippi State and at Florida, they're not quite what Baltimore runs, but they are Baltimore-like, meaning gap scheme, yep, downhill, power scheme. It's not the traditional zone read. Because when I look at Baltimore, Baltimore is beating people up, running power, running downhill, coming downhill. Dan Mullen has familiarity in creating that. And with Dallas's offensive line, that would be a better fit, not only with the offensive line moving people off the ball, but with the big fella Ezekiel Elliott behind him. And so you bring that up, I think it makes a lot of sense. It is one of those names that you certainly had associated, because all of the names that we heard with Lincoln Riley, Urban Meyer, Dan Mullen makes a lot of sense. And they probably could lure him away from Florida with a pretty substantial check.
It's a Dallas Cowboys. I mean, absolutely. So 47 years old, Buck. And I'm just looking up his resume here. So 2017, the year before he got to Florida, Florida was 4-7. Okay. In 2018, Dan Mullen, they go 10-3. Right now, they're 9-2. They're 9-2, and their two losses are to LSU, who was, you know, were they number one in the country, and Georgia, two top five teams. Those are their two losses. So a guy can coach. I mean, he's a good football coach. To win at Mississippi State the way that he did, I didn't realize he's only 47 years old. I know it says on here, this is Wikipedia, take it for what it's worth. He's making $6 million a year there at Florida, so he's not hurting for money, but the Dallas Cowboys aren't either. So I don't know. I was thinking about different names, and I'm a big Matt Campbell fan. I think he's a star in what he's able to accomplish there at Iowa State. I look at guys, Buck, you win at the Mississippi States and the Iowa States. Go back to Urban Meyer, winning at the Bowling Greens, you know, winning at the Utahs at a level they're not used to or accustomed to. That tells me you're a darn good football coach.
And I think your point, we talked about this, and we talked about it when we were soliciting names for those team building podcasts, that we wanted to see guys who had orchestrated a couple different turnarounds, because then you know they have a proven track record of success. When you go to Matt Rhule had turned it around in two places. Temple, which was struggling when he took over, he quickly got them up. They had back-to-back 10-win seasons before he left. Baylor, he inherited a mess at Baylor coming off the Art Briles situation and the scandal that surrounded their program. Got them up and running after 1-11 season, got them a winning season. They're going to finish maybe as a conference champion because they've earned the right to go to the Big 12 title game. So we know that he has a formula that works. And Dan Mullins, we've seen it. Mississippi State took over, made them a winner. Then we see him, what he's been able to do at Florida. So we understand that they certainly understand how to build it from the ground up. Matt Campbell is interesting because he has also done that. The only thing that I don't know of an NFL tie. And so how does that work?
I read something about him that said after one of his first years, I don't know if it was at Mount Union or where he was early on in his coaching career, that the Patriots tried to hire him, which I thought it was Scott Pioli. They said Scott Pioli had been around him and tried to hire him when he was really young. I mean, so
very interesting.
NFL people, I have an affinity for this guy. I know this guy.
Well, he's smart. You can't deny what he's been able to do at Iowa State, because we've talked about it. All these coaches, can you do more with less? Because if you can do more with less, you would like to think that, man,
we'll give you more.
Yeah, we give you more. Imagine what you can pull off. And so he has done that. I do believe in that. And I also think this last coaching cycle and looking at what it kind of turned out, I think owners are going to look for something a little different. The head coach has to be more than just an offensive play caller. The head coach has to be a guy that is a visionary that can create a program. Yep. I would be more concerned and interesting in trying to hire someone that's a program builder, someone that understands how to really build it from the ground up, more so than someone who has a sexy playbook, because we're seeing the best leaders are the ones that are winning games at each and every level.
One other interesting note here, we're talking about college coaches making a leap up to the NFL. Somebody told me this yesterday that since, I guess this is this the second year for the December signing period?
Mm-hmm.
But they said, you know, last year we did not see any NFL coaches hired for college jobs. Like a lot of times you'll see a, you know, a quarterback coach or a, you know, a defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator at the NFL level will take a college job because sometimes they can wait to fill those jobs until the NFL season concludes. But now that they have the early signing period, he said that's just not going to happen anymore. It's never going to be more difficult for a NFL coordinator to get a college head coaching job because of this whole change in the early signing date. I thought that was pretty interesting.
I mean, it's true because it has changed everything. The signing period being in early December has made it where NFL coaches don't have the opportunity to kind of get their feet on the ground. Like, yeah, you can't you lose an entire recruiting class if you wait on an NFL coach. And the funny thing for me, when I look at NFL coaches going down to college, if they have a quick understanding of how to recruit, how to build an NFL-like front office at the collegiate level, I think we have seen some success. When you just look at Mel Tucker going down to Colorado, and they are mm-hmm. coming off a big win against UW, having the experience and being able to go down and make those things, I do believe that you can have success. Herm Edwards having success at Arizona State, where they just coming off a big win at Oregon. Yes, it's different when you have the recruiting element, and you do need to hire what I call some young, aggressive recruiters. But the game is one where I think NFL coaches can go down to the collegiate game and have success. So you are having that. And also with the money being the same, and I mean, I think the stability at both levels are now about the same. I would like to see more NFL coaches kind of dip down and see what kind of success they could have building programs, because it could give you an opportunity to come back up. Just look at Matt Rhule and what we were talking about, because he had been an NFL assistant for like a year or so, comes down to collegiate level, shows people that he can build a program, and now his name is being mentioned not only at top college jobs, but also for some of these NFL jobs that are sure to open up.
Yeah, Matt Rhule, Matt Campbell, Dan Mullen, one of these guys, if not multiple of these guys, are going to get opportunities for NFL gigs here coming up in this next
Because DJ,
so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Because DJ, when the NFL hiring cycle comes, we've exhausted the offensive pipeline. Like, there aren't many offensive coaches that are left or ready to kind of make that next jump. So owners are going to have to look elsewhere. And the easiest place to look is in the collegiate ranks to see if you can find a new, hot, attractive name, someone that can build a program.
Well, something to keep an eye on there. And do you want to hit on any players before we get out of here, Buck? I was looking through my notes, the guys I wanted to hit on, but I feel like we've talked about the guys I had written down numerous times. So
yeah, but I do
have nobody there to add to the mix.
No, but I do believe, like, coming off those big games that we saw. So we saw Arizona State and Oregon, and then Ohio State and Penn State. Sometimes we got to play the hits. I am having the toughest time with the Justin Herbert evaluation. Justin Herbert is
you and everybody else.
I mean, he's prototypical. He has size. He has arm talent. He's rung up. I mean, he's put up some impressive stats. But I kind of feel like they're almost like potato chips. A lot of empty calories, right? So when I watch him play, and I'm watching him play against Arizona State, and I'm looking for like a signature win. I'm looking for a drive where he comes back. We've talked about franchise quarterbacks need to have kind of this over my dead body will that you feel. And I just haven't seen those. And so I don't know how, if you never see those moments at Oregon, that you're confident that those moments will come in the pros. And we've talked about some of these quarterbacks, and early in the podcast, we talked about Lamar Jackson and even Patrick Mahomes. At least at their respective schools, I felt like I have a handful of games that both of those guys look like the best player on the field. Lamar Jackson, not only in his Heisman season, but in his second season coming after that, you felt like, oh, okay, man, this dude is awesome. Like, he is absolutely taking this game over. Pat Mahomes, we felt that. With Justin Herbert, I don't know if I have a game that I can go in the library and say, hey, this is the game where he absolutely took it over. And that's troubling to me if I'm kind of viewing him and ranking him as a franchise quarterback, particularly if I'm considering him as the number one guy in the class. I just don't know if I can hang my hat on that.
I was thinking about the difference between him and Josh Allen, right? Because two huge athletic, strong arm passers, right? To me, Herbert is robotic and Josh Allen is creative. And you know, you live with some of the downside stuff there with Josh Allen, but he's there. There's a playmaking quality that he possesses. When things aren't going well, he can make something happen. And with Justin Herbert, I just get, it's just a little too robotic for me. Like, I want to see him play outside the scheme a little bit more. Run around. You're a great athlete, man. Go make a play. And I just feel like it's a lot of one-read throws. He misses some gimmies. He makes some wow throws from the pocket. I mean, he's got a huge arm, and then you could cut up 10 throws and be like, whoa. But then it's just, I want to see him just be a little more fluid, a little more loose, a little more creative. I haven't seen that side of his game.
No, I haven't seen that side of his game, and I wonder about that. You are right about Josh Allen being creative, and Josh Allen has really improved this year. It's not always reflective in his completion percentage. He still can be prone to make some mistakes, but there's one thing that you can't deny. He's added energy to the Buffalo Bills. He's also added playmaking. Oh, yeah. And at the end of the day, we've heard several coaches that have come on when talking about the quarterback position. I remember Urban Meyer and even Lou Holtz saying this. The guy needs to be a playmaker. At the end of the day, I need him to make plays. Like, everything can't be from my mouth to designing the perfect play for him to do it. Sometimes he has to bail you out. I haven't seen Justin Herbert bail out the Oregon offense enough to feel good about him as my franchise quarterback. Maybe that will come later in the season. Maybe we'll see a flash or a snippet of that in a bowl game. But the time is running out because he has played some significant games. And for us to continue to talk about like we haven't seen that, to me, is troubling, especially when you are basically going to have him go against Joe Burrow and even Tua.
Yeah.
We have seen those guys have those moments where they've made these plays that have not been scripted, that have not been creative designs by the coach. They just, hey, I got to go make a play because my team needs it. You need that element if you're going to be a franchise quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, that's going to be a tricky evaluation, no doubt.
Last one.
Ohio State guys, Chase Young lived up to it. And J.K. Dobbins, by the way, if I'm giving my, what are we in, November? If I'm giving my November red star, which, you know, I'll hand out red stars once we get to, usually we do that in April, once you've had a chance to really get to know all these kids, who your favorite players are. But off all the guys I've seen, J.K. Dobbins might be my red star right now, Buck. I love the way that dude runs.
Look, DJ, it's something about having a running back that you can give it to and just trust him that he's going to find a way to make it happen. I think the thing that is significant in the Penn State game, 36 carries. 36 carries to me signifies that you not only have the stamina and endurance to be a workhorse back, but that you wanted the ball. At a time where we're seeing backs by committee more than ever, to me, as an old school scout, there's still something to seeing a guy tote it and tote it repeatedly, because I need to see your stamina. I need to see your want to. I need to see how you perform when you're tired, but the game is still on the line. Can I trust you with the ball in your hands when we have to have those gotta-have-it plays? J.K. Dobbins has certainly displayed that. But the first kid that you talked about, Chase Young, I saw your tweet after that where you said, hey, my top 50 would be released, and I have number one and Chase Young, and 22 through 50 are TBD. The thing about Chase Young that's remarkable, 16.5 sacks, that's one thing. 16.5 sacks while missing two games is another. But the way that he goes about getting his sacks, DJ, it's hard to find something that you don't like. He's long. He's athletic. He has a complete toolbox. He plays hard. Yep. He finishes. He's a natural leader. There's a presence about him when he's on the defense. And we have seen him play in the last 2 years when he played alongside Bosa. And I mean, you were like, whoa, man, who's this guy? Like, I know he's a young fella, but he pops. And we've said, scouting is really simple. When I turn on the tape, especially when I'm looking at good guys, I want to be able to be like, okay, cool, real quick, 5 minutes, I've seen my guy, he shows up. I don't want to have to run through the tape and look for these plays where you're like, hey, wait till the fifth minute mark in the fourth quarter. I want to see him stand out. And in these big games against a big-time team in Penn State, he jumped off the tape. And it's something that he has consistently done throughout his career. Yeah, Chase Young, to me, is the best player in college football. And if he comes out, he is certainly the best player in this class. And then the teams at the top, they're going to have to make a tough decision, because we talked about it last week. Those core positions that you have to have to build a team, quarterback, pass rusher, left tackle, cornerback, he's a pass rusher that everyone wants. Where do you stack him against some of the quarterbacks in the class?
I tell you what, we've had this discussion in years past, and we'll have it this spring, and I've got more work to do on Burrow. But, man, I usually say if it's close, you know, you never take – I will take a really good quarterback over a great anything else, because the quarterback position is what it is, the most important position in sports. If you don't have one, you got to get one. However, Hall of Fame type pass rusher, once a generation type pass rusher, is the second most important thing to the quarterback position. And I don't think I'd have the courage to pass on somebody like that for what I think is a really good quarterback. I think I cross my fingers and toes I'm going to find that quarterback in another avenue or another year. But I don't know if I want to have that on my resume, that I let that dude slip through my fingers.
Nah, DJ, I agree with you. I think sometimes you got to grade the talent for the talent. And I think it's hard to poke holes at Chase Young. I think he is his football character is solid. I think he loves the game. I think it's apparent in the way that he plays. You check off the boxes from the physical prototypes. He's long. He's athletic. He gets after it. He has a variety of moves. He's not just one of those one-trick ponies that uses his speed. There's a lot to love about him as a prospect. And when you talk about being a franchise, because you're picking number one, you're looking for franchise-type guys. He's a franchise player. He is someone that you build around. And whoever's sitting at the top of the board, it is going to be difficult to bypass him if he's there, regardless of which quarterback is available.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We're going to have plenty of time to dig into all these guys as we get further on into the spring. Anything else you want to add, Buck, before we roll out of here?
Nah, man, I think that was a great podcast. That's kind of one of the things, like when we talked about working together and doing podcasts, these conversations are the one, because these are the conversations that you have in meeting rooms, from the way that we talked about the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson and the way they built their team and really elevated him and how he elevated himself, to the demise of the Rams, to talking about these college coaches and then these players. This is why I want to be a part of this stuff, because these are the conversations that we want to have. And hopefully the listeners can appreciate the realness that we're bringing when we have these discussions, because this is what I really was fascinated about when you take notes watching games over the course of the weekend.
Yeah, no, this is, for those who don't know, like when me and Bucky talk on the phone, like this is basically what this episode was, just a phone conversation between me and Buck. Just kind of talking about what's going on in the world, about, you know, what coaches could go here or there, who'd be the first pick, you know, what about the top teams, what's wrong with this team, what's right with that team. That's what it was, just an extended phone conversation. Now, I read an article the other day, Buck, that said last year there were 500,000 podcasts. This year there are 700,000 podcasts.
Jeez.
So there are a lot of options out there. Everybody and their uncle has a podcast. So I do want to say on Thanksgiving week that we are thankful that you guys make us a part of your routine here. We do appreciate you guys listening to us. That's a lot of company we have in the podcast space.
No, it is a lot of company. And like DJ, we've talked about it. Like both of us are very, very competitive, and we want to make this the best podcast that's out there. So to that point, if you're a listener and a steady subscriber, please feel free to ask some comments. If there are things that you like, things that you would like to see us touch on and talk about, we're definitely not afraid to venture into those topics. So just let us know. You talk about leaving comments and all that other stuff. Do that and make sure you kind of push up our rating on those ranking lists.
Yeah, there you go. Apple Podcasts. We appreciate that. All right. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We appreciate you guys listening to us, and we'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.